Welcome to the Consummate Athlete Podcast, where we explore what it means to be a well-rounded, happy, goal-crushing athlete. Every week, myself, sports journalist Molly Herford, and cycling coach and kinesiologist Peter Glassford interview experts and chat through all of your training questions. We're excited to have you along for the ride.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Consummate Athlete Podcast. Peter, how's it going?
It's going well. Yeah, I can't complain. How about yourself?
I'm good. You know what? I was just thinking I had a pretty solid weekend all around. Saturday was a little hectic. I covered Paris-Roubaix Femmes Avec Zwift for bicycling. So that was super fun. I was shrieking at the computer watching the final sprint. Just absolutely next level. If you haven't seen the race, just go even just watch the final. Just watch the sprint. It's so good. Just so fun watching these just incredible riders. Like, you couldn't have picked a better lead group of riders to come into that velodrome. Just, oh my gosh, goosebumps.
So they were all world champions of something.
Yeah, the announcer was like, we have three world champions, two track world champions, one time trial world champion, and they're all, you know, just gearing up for this final sprint. And it was just unreal, honestly. So that was super fun. Then right after that, I went into a 20-mile run. So that was a bit of a kick in the pants because the women's race didn't finish till like 11:45. So that was a little late for my long run, and then came home to ripping up some carpet in the house and an unpleasant tile surprise underneath. So that's making our week a little sure. Hectic, but yeah. That's life.
Yeah, that's renovations. There you go.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm on a no project ban, which I think will actually, or a project ban, not a no project ban, to be clear. No more projects. No more projects allowed, which actually fits really nicely into what we're talking about today, which is we are now getting into not quite the home stretch ahead of Leadville, but we are getting into that like 3-4 months before my, I don't even want to call it my A race. This is like my A plus 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 race. This is the race that, you know, 6 years ago at the Ellen's Cyclocross Quest that we were coaching at when we went around and set our goals for.
That's right. You and a bunch of 14-year-old girls.
Yeah, me and a bunch of 14, 15-year-old girls. Oh, you say that so. Peter was in tears the entire time that this goal setting activity happened. Everyone just went around and said their kind of like big goals, whether it was like for the next year or like 10 years. Peter's just silently sobbing in the corner. And I said I wanted to win Leadville. And this year, this is the attempt.
Okay. Well, there you go. I mean, don't build it up too much, but yeah, there you go. It's once in a lifetime. You're never going back.
Yeah, one and done. One and done. I mean, honestly, I do think that that's true for a multitude of reasons.
Sure.
Which we'll probably get into in this episode.
It's like a burn the boats thing.
This is my attempt, period.
So yeah, it's coming up on 3 months. We're not quite there, but I mean, coming up onto that, which is a good, you know, the timeline's somewhat arbitrary, but it's sort of the idea that, you know, I like 3 month plans often. You know, 2 months can work okay. That's usually, you know, two good blocks, you know, maybe three good blocks, depending on how you space them. But 3 months I sort of like because it gives you a bit of room still. You're still able to play a little bit. You can make some mistakes. You know, you can still put in bigger volume. The problem is that a lot of these adaptations, especially for endurance, you know, you wouldn't want to, not that you wouldn't do longer stuff, you know, in the last, say, 4 weeks, but you're going to start tapering down a little bit, especially with running. But I think even with biking, we have to start being careful. You have the travel to the race is going to be a factor in a lot of cases, whether that's the week of, or we'll get into when we're going to travel up to altitude, because that can be a factor that you can play with as well. So yeah, we're talking about this last 3 months before something like Leadville. So we're going to speak towards the Leadville bike and the Leadville run today.
Yeah, because we know a lot of you listening, Leadville bike is a huge bucket list for, you know, a lot of the clients we've worked with, a lot of like Peter's past clients. Peter held the Canadian Leadville 100 mountain bike record for quite a while.
That's right. And this could apply, though, a lot of clients now are doing the Breck Epic, which is sort of in the week between these two events. So it's similar, 3 months at
Speaking
altitude.
Of, if you're doing it, I hesitate to say that I've added more to my plate the week before Leadville, but I will probably be out at Breck Epic doing some women's stuff. Very exciting.
Okay. And they're putting on a big push for their women's category, I think, this year is a big piece. And our friend Sonia Looney is doing the race, I think, but also pushing some of that
women's programming.
Yeah, that's a good way to phrase it.
So expect to see us out for some of that at least.
Yeah. And hopefully, if you are at the run or the bike, let's connect and see what, get a.
Yeah, a lot of these bucket list races are starting to be at altitude. I mean, even just if you look at the Lifetime Grand Prix series, you do have, I think it's like half of the events, altitude is a factor, or at least
Which it'll
two-thirds.
be interesting to see if they change that at all. It's hard because the country is very big, but well, it'll be interesting to see. But even for the masters age group adult athlete,
Yeah.
there's a lot of stuff. A lot of people want to go to the mountains to do this stuff. It is mountain biking or trail running, so you do want to go to the mountains for some of this. So other events that are in that time period, I'm thinking of SBT gravel is another big one. There's so many, right? And I think whatever you're preparing for, whether it's at altitude or whether it's in 3 months or not, I think a lot of the concepts we'll speak towards today will be helpful, hopefully.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's start just kind of by backing out. So, when I got into the race, when I started, kind of decided, like starting back in August or even earlier than that, June, July, I've been reading race reports and like looking at the course profile for years now. I mean, I could literally just quote Born to Run to like at you at this point, the book, the fantastic book by Chris McDougall that I blame for all of this ultra running stuff. But I feel like at this point, I know the Leadville course, like
Sure.
from
And I think
studying
that's a
it.
big thing, for people who do not live in or at a race site. I think it's nice to go and look through. Now, in this day and age, there's head cams of a lot of
I
this
was gonna
stuff.
say, you were just watching
I was
one.
impressed the runners because they don't have head cams usually, but I guess people just run with selfie sticks and stuff. So yeah, the couple are, really great quality and, at running pace, but they sort of jump ahead here and there. But you can get a feel for the course and, the different people's experiences. And yeah, so I mean, I think when you do this, it's on your treadmill or indoor trainer in the winter would be a great time to absorb this. And I do think that there's a bit of a connection there where you start visualizing
For
while you're
sure.
doing, you're pedaling or you're running. I do think there's a nice piece there.
I think so. And I mean, I think I would say that's why we elected to go out to the Leadville Trail Marathon last year as the qualifier that I wanted to do was like. To me, it was super important to actually go to Leadville and see the town, see how the race was run out there, and actually, I mean, get the experience running at that altitude to see how I did. But like,
And that's, one of the, we have a article called Leadville Faster Without Training More, I think is the gist of it. So we'll link to that, and we're updating it for 2024 as well. So a couple new bits there. So if you haven't been to that post, or if you've been to that post, maybe check it out again. That'd be great. But the one portion of that is, Leadville, these things are at altitude. The altitude is important, but don't freak out about it because a lot of people go and do great and they're from Florida or they're from flatland areas and they don't do any specific preparation or on purpose preparation. But you can certainly do different things to prepare for that. So the one piece you mentioned is in the year before, or years before, if you can go to a race at altitude, then you'll get an idea of how big of a deal is it for you, because we all have different susceptibilities, and how much it affects us and how it affects us. And you can sort of learn about how the nutrition and the hydration and the pacing and all these things are factors and that you can control.
yeah, exactly.
So you went,
So I
so
went.
you experienced it. We didn't really necessarily tour a lot of the specific course, but you got a feel for the town.
Yeah, and I mean, for I would say like there were several climbs in the race. It went to the I think the highest pass in that area, although we didn't go all the way up because the course had to be rerouted due to snow. Anyway, it was still a lot of like the climbs that were going to be similar to what I'll see on like the actual
Sure.
race day.
And it's interesting. I think we talked about the probably that's a better because there's also I don't the running must also do a camp. I'm not as familiar with that, but the for biking you can go and do a camp beforehand, and or you can do the stage race beforehand. And a lot of people will elect, even some of the people, the athletes in the Lifetime, the professional series, went and did the stage race beforehand.
Right.
I think Sophia actually did it beforehand to sort of get a pre-ride and sort of get a confidence boost, sort of chunking the course into thirds. So you're getting the pre-ride. And then also, altitude exposure. And then you're also getting just a sense for them. I think it's like almost a pacing thing, like how fast can we
For
go,
sure, yeah.
triangulate it off of that. So I do think that that's an option. We spoke about how sometimes you can get weird mindset things if you go for a camp or you go too far ahead You're spending too much time at the race site, and there's actually some interesting research around that where athletes get all weird about, the race site, and they're trying to pre-ride it, and then there's all these shoulds that come in, like, oh, in training I went up this hill in an hour, but in the race day it took me an hour four and I suck and I'm quitting.
And you know what? I think I would say I actually did see that at Western States. We'd gone and done the camp, and our friend Karen raced it, and I paced her. And I would definitely say the experience of racing, and obviously I was only pacing her for the last like 25 miles, but I'd run with her for the 70 odd miles that the camp does. And I would say, like, having done the camp, it almost took away from the race a little bit because we'd kind of already been to all of the places before. So, like, it almost gave us too much information. So I think there is something to be said for a little bit of like going in slightly blind. Like you're prepared, but you're not super calm about it, if that makes sense.
Maybe a little bit knowing yourself, but there is pros and cons. I think sometimes it's like running. If you ever run or ridden at night, sometimes stuff goes by really quickly because you can't see anything. So I always found that at, 24-hour races, once you got over the, like, I'm getting up at night or something for my lap, it just always felt like it went by faster. And I think some of it was that there wasn't as much visual stuff. But I think when you don't have anything to compare it to, it's like, well, I guess this is just how long this takes. So that can be weighed. And so what does that mean? That means that maybe for your training camps, you would go somewhere else fun that's at altitude, get the benefit of the altitude and the exposure and figure out what that's like, but then still leave a bit of mystery. And I think for most age group adult masters, that's probably good because it's really enhancing your experience, right?
For
Whereas,
sure.
like, I always go to Leadville and, this raw, exposed mountaintop versus going somewhere else, which could just be, we went to spend a lot of time more in Breckenridge where there's more, stores and facilities, and it's a little more gentle on the elevation. Still lots, it's still quite high, but the mountain bike trails are a little better down there as well. And so we had a great time. And then we did do like this race, and I think maybe we went up once more or something too. But in any case, that sort of planning of the exposure is a big if you can get to altitude, is a big piece.
Well, and so we didn't go to altitude. It's difficult to do altitude in the US in the winter, obviously, because most places that have altitude are very
Well, if
snowy.
you're going to limit yourself to your sport, to running or biking, it probably would. So other people might go and do backcountry
For
skiing
sure.
for months in at a hut or something. Yeah, and that could be great too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if altitude is your thing, but I also need miles on running.
Well,
So there is that. So anyway, we did not obviously go to altitude this winter, but what we did do though is we went to Florida for a little bit for some flat and some warm, just from like a weather standpoint, with the van. But then we actually did go back to Brevard and stayed closer to where there was like a very hilly route for me to just kind of do. So even on my normal, yeah, it's easy to go run trails and climbs and stuff on weekends when you have time. But we tried to pick a place where during the week I could do all of my runs would have a
That's
lot of
great.
climbing.
Yeah, and that's, so again, this is why the altitude's important. It gets a lot of talking about it.
But there's 1,500 feet of climbing in
But
that
the
race
big
too.
rocks are always, are you sleeping pretty well? Are you eating pretty well? Are you healthy? Have you been training consistently? And then I think the terrain is one that often gets missed. And sometimes the terrain piece can be, I live in a flat area and there aren't mountains. So that's not as changeable. You live where you live. But sometimes people will sign up for races with the best intentions, but then it's actually more of like a dispositional thing. They could ride gravel, or they could ride mountain bike, or they could ride hills, but they actually really like going on their like five group rides a week on their road bike on a, and it's in a city on a flat route. And it's nothing, there's no shade to it, but sometimes there is this, like, you signed up for this race, and ideally the race would be pulling you in a direction you want to be pulled.
And we have a post on this actually, but can you prepare for the goal you have
And do you
set?
want to?
Exactly.
And it is. So we'll link to that one as well. But that's something just to reflect on, because the training can be easier, not easy, or maybe simpler, not easy, but simple, if it's something you want to get pulled towards, and then also probably fits into the place you live. Not to say that you can't prepare for something hilly and altitude from flat, but sometimes it's nice to think about, what do I really like doing? What do I do well? What is easy, in my current life, with this next year? Do you have the space to prepare for this as you would like to? Or is this like a next year thing? And this year, maybe you do crits or cyclocross or time trial or track. If you live in a city beside a track, then maybe that's the way to go with it. You're getting ready for track nationals.
Yeah, for sure. Love it. And I guess
So
on
go ahead. Where were you going?
I was going to go to projects, but where were you going to
Well, I think you're on altitude. Do you want to keep going as far as that, or no? You want to save that for a bit later?
Well, we're talking about planning here, so let's just finish this thought.
Okay.
And this is coming back to what I was joking about with our flooring here is I'm now on a project ban because, as you were just saying, like, can you prepare for the goal you've set? Like, yes, except I have the tendency to pile a billion and one things into every moment of our lives. I'll have two books coming out with Stronger Publishing this summer. We're working on a book. We have a big website revamp coming next month. Our house is torn up at the moment because we're doing our floors. There's just like a lot of stuff going on. And honestly, I was just writing about this in my journal this morning. My goal, and I realize I say it every month, is by the end of this month, I really do want to have most of these like big rock projects sort of just like squared away so that the next few months they're going to still be busy. Like, obviously, we still have work, I still have like travel and projects and stuff, but like no more extraneous or like extra projects, definitely no more house projects till after Leadville.
And planning is one of the ways we really try and help the athletes we work with because that it is busy life, right? Like I think as an adult, most of the people we work with are, they're professionals, they're parents, they're medical people, they're, all these things. So their lives are busy. We're not probably getting rid of a lot of these things. You're going to keep writing books. There's no way around it. But what we're trying to do is plan that key race so that there's a nice run. And we talked about 3 months, at least give me 6 weeks where it's not a family vacation. We talked a lot about the family vacation and its timing, try and not put it right before that thing where it's interrupting that consistency, right? There's nothing fancy has to happen in the last 4 weeks, but I probably wouldn't stop training for, 2 weeks to go, drink a bunch of alcohol on a beach.
Save that for post-race.
For sure, there's probably other times in the year where it would be okay. Outside of that 12 weeks, you could take a week or two off to go on vacation. I'm just that last bit, ideally, we would keep that, because there's all these adaptations that you're trying to keep. Notable is the, blood plasma volume and red blood cells and these things that are related to altitude, even regardless of if you're at altitude, you probably wouldn't want to give those up. So the planning is a big way we can actually have success as busy athletes. Aside, what's the title of this post? We're talking Leadville faster without pedaling more or without training more or something. So we want to plan it. So for Molly, it's trying to plan this other stuff to like just, it can be afterwards, it can be a little reduced, it can be before this certain date, but then trying to actually put a ban on some of it. You're not going to get rid of all of it. Your kids are still going to be there, work's going to not, you can't stop it, but trying to just push it a little bit and give yourself a bit of slack. And it's not that you're going to even necessarily train more. It's that all these other things, the recovery, the eating, the travel, the amount of fights I have with clients where it's like, I know you, it's going to take an hour to drive to this like place that's got gravel and hills and, but like that's
You
the
need
idea.
gravel
That's
hills.
the thing, right? And it's this investment of like, yeah, instead of a 5 hour trainer ride, it's a 3 hour mountain ride. But that sounds really fun. I don't know. You know what you think? So trying to leave slack so that we can do some of this stuff. And some of that slack will be used resting. It will be getting to bed that extra hour early so that yes, you actually are in bed for 9 hours and maybe you get 7 hours of sleep,
Yeah, for
right?
sure.
So that's the idea, is trying to leave the space.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny. I just actually had to get a new compressor for our compression boots because ours finally bit the dust after 5 years. Shout out to Hype Rice. They were lovely about, reasonable replacement, even though it was 5 years old. Not sponsored at all, but just wanted to put that out there. But honestly, since we got it, I've managed to use them all of once because we've had so much
Yeah, I've
stuff
actually
going
got more,
on.
and I don't even believe in
I love them, and I have not gotten to spend time in them because we've been kind of in like flux with some house stuff. So yeah, this is just like, it sounds silly, but having stuff happening in our small house makes it harder to, spend the hour in the compression boots because
Well,
now
and the
our space
thing,
is
as
all
much as
jacked
I
up.
don't believe in them, they are a nice way. And what I'm trying to do in the evening is when we're watching TV, it's easy to have the phone out and the TV on. And so I'm trying to, with medium success, I'm not going to say I'm doing great with this, but to put those on and then put my phone, on the charger in another part of the house so that I have to just watch the TV and lay on the ground and get, that hour of relaxation,
Yeah.
call it recovery or maybe the compression is doing something magical. I don't know. So I think that's, again, that's what you're leaving slack for, is that you can do without your phone for 45 minutes. You don't have to be putting out fires or, you know, checking on whatever. You know, you find your own thing. But that's the thing. It's like, yeah, instead of scraping the floor, I can lay and recover and then, you know, be more mentally or physically ready the next day to do the training again.
Well, honestly, I thought the boots were super helpful. It's funny, I was using them a couple weeks ago because my knee was a little bit funky, and they were super helpful with that. I think there was just like a lot of inflammation, and it really helped kind of dial that down. And it's funny that when I have any kind of injury, I am suddenly all like I suddenly have all the time in the world for the boots and the appointment with the physio and all this stuff. But like when things are status quo, suddenly
Well,
no time.
there's a saying to that effect that, you know, if you don't have time for it now, your body will make the time later or something like that. Yeah, suddenly you can drive to physio, but you couldn't roll your knee for
Yeah,
5 minutes
exactly. So
or whatever it is you're
need
supposed to
to yeah, need to keep that in mind.
do. Okay.
So yeah, I think that pretty much
So
covers
planning
your
for success, leaving some slack in those first, you know, those 2 to 3 months beforehand as best you can.
And I mean, let's talk. We got an altitude tent. So I laugh about this because you had one back when you were racing Leadville, like way before we met. And you actually eventually got rid of yours and hopes of meeting women, and it worked. So
Well, there was, I don't know, correlation or causation, I guess. But yeah, that's the idea. And I think I was just working on this Leadville post. I said, you know, there's this sort of don't freak out about altitude. Maybe try and go on a vacation in the year or two beforehand if you can. Or, you know, in the months, this could be 3 months out, 2 months out, you could go for a trip. And I have a few clients that are doing that, you know, 2 times during the year, they're able to go visit a friend in the mountains, right? And so that's in, it's not a far distance for them, you know, relative terms. So that pre-camp I think is probably the best because that's actually going to the place
For
and
sure.
seeing how your body goes, and then you won't freak out as much, right? And there's probably a bit of a like repeated camp exposure if you can get there for, you know, a week or something each time. There's probably effect there. But
But
then there's these other tools. We'll talk about heat today a little bit, which we're less familiar with, but you know, certainly using more and more, and the science is coming along more and more with the heat. And then yeah, there's these altitude tents, basically, where it sort of simulates the altitude.
yeah, and I mean, we'll have a post up on this actually as this episode comes out. And to be clear, these are not cheap. This is a major like life disturbance, both in terms of like it's costly, and I'll talk about a few tips we have for sleeping in one if you are kind of interested in it. But like it is literally a PVC, a clear PVC tent that goes over your bed. We have the cubicle version, so it is more of like a normal high ceiling type thing. But like, make no mistake, this looks like a serial killer's room. Like, this looks like you're watching the show Dexter.
And so you're probably, what is it, 10,000-ish Canadian dollars, something like
Canadian
that.
dollars, yeah. It ain't
You know,
cheap.
maybe you can get used ones, you can lease them, I think, as
Yeah,
well.
they do
There's some
rentals, yeah.
companies will do that. So you can do it. Now, I think the price for a lot of adult, you know, professionals probably, you know, because you can resell them decently, you know, it's probably isn't that intimidating. But with the main issues I see is most people don't sleep very well, and you're going to have sleep disruption with these.
That's the first thing I put in
You
this
are
article,
getting in
yeah.
and out of a tent every night. So if you have a spouse, like this is probably a non-starter because they probably don't want to get in and out of a tent and be super hot for the next like 6 months plus, right? So it's usually a non-starter. So that's why we've hesitated ever talking about it, because it just between the price and the inconvenience and the disruption to like the big rocks, I just find it's a tough one, a tough sell, if you
Yeah.
will.
So if we want to be like very, honest about the fact that, yeah, this is a very like privileged thing to be able to do. I'm very lucky that I have a husband who is okay sleeping in one of these things for months at a time, but this is not like an easy thing. It might seem like a super cool, like, ooh, buy it now, and like boom, I'm altitude adapted. But like it is, I mean, every night, it's
Still
not
good buy it
easy.
now goal. It's just like 10 grand, buy
Buy it now.
it
Well, we talk about this all the time, like are you buying gear or are you buying time? Like,
now.
is this thing actually worth it? And we always say like a lot of these modalities are, whether you're talking about the massage gun or the compression boots or the altitude tents or whatever, you get them and then you don't actually use them because they're not always easy or convenient to use. They're like just kind of a fun big rock to move by purchasing it, but
Sure.
that is not the actual, like you have to actually use it for it to work. So that said, honestly, the tent works. Like there's no two ways about it. We use the pulse oximeter. Like It's certainly taking the air out of the oxygen out of the.
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say that it like the gains are like definite, but for sure it drops your pulse oxygen.
Now, I did actually talk. So I'll preface this. I talked to accidentally an altitude expert the other day, or interviewing her for another article, but it turns out her PhD is actually in altitude adaptations, specifically with using tents like this.
Sure. Because you said in Australia they use them a lot.
Yeah, in
Yeah,
Australia,
because they don't have altitude.
they actually have like a house that's been altitude-ed,
Right.
whatever you want to call it.
Which is the more deluxe option. You can make whole rooms
That's true.
into
Yeah. If you have an unlimited budget and a spouse that's like tolerant of this, I would say like I would definitely have just gotten our whole room done if we had that kind of like money, but we don't. That's ridiculous. Maybe someday. Anyway, where was I going with that? Oh, so she was saying they do work. Like they help for altitude, period. Like it's been shown. However, she does say so a lot of the brands now have like bubbles basically that you can sleep in if you have a spouse that doesn't want to sleep in it, but you still want to use it. She's not a fan of those. She says like she doesn't really think they work, and the disturbance they like the sleep disturbance from having your head in a bubble is not worth the altitude gains.
Yeah, it's like a covered hood or something.
Yeah.
Which maybe, would be nice if you're traveling or something, but the problem is the
But then you got to bring the generator.
generator's massive and pretty loud too. So that would be another consideration is, where this generator is going to go. So we're trying to like not sell it, but sell it, I guess. I don't know what's going on here, but
I think
it is an option. It is an option. I have seen people use it. So it's more on the elite athlete side of things a lot of times, but there are elite masters out there as well who might use it. And there are other things you can do with it. You can train, with it as well, by wearing a mask as you train. And so you just breathe the simulated oxygen. There's one other thing too. Oh, you can sort of sit on the couch with it. We don't do this. I used to do this, but you can, some of them will have a high altitude adapter and you can sort of sit with simulated altitude while you type on your computer or something, which might be an option for, but again, you are now sitting
Well,
with a mask all day.
yeah, it's anything. We could be doing that with the mask all day. I don't. You sleep in it. That's it.
So that's an option. I think we're posting about this. We're going to do a separate post on the altitude tent as well, just because that question does come up. And so you want to be, pros and cons, but a lot of people don't think about the noise and the heat. Like it can get quite warm. And what are the 3 key months going into this are going to be very warm in a lot of places, even with your air conditioning. Like it's still like you're in a tent that's sealed, so it gets quite humid.
Yeah,
So
so
you said your one
again,
tip
yeah,
you wanted to drop.
over on the blog we have I have like kind of a few tips for sleeping in one, and most of them are about actually like the heat mitigation stuff, like making sure that you are airing it out. Like Peter's probably ready to murder me because we haven't been able to make the bed basically because you can't really like you don't really want to like fold the sheets o like the comforter over the sheets in the morning because it is damp. Like I'm not gonna lie, you really need to air the thing out every day. Otherwise, I'm pretty sure we're gonna end up with a moldy mattress. Just the level of humidity in it from two people sleeping in that thing at night is high.
Nice. There's like a fan as well. You can
We did get a we got this the best like $35 USB fan. This thing charge like stays charged for 24 hours. It's insane. It's
which is
wild.
yeah, which is great for camping, I think, and we use it in the van as
Yeah.
well. So that's it's a great speed. I mean, I think I actually use it right in the
That's what I
trainer,
was gonna
and I think
say.
if you got a couple of these, they really manipulate the direction, and they have a clip, like
A
a
really
really
good
strong
clip, yeah.
clamp. So I think for trainer riding, that's a nice one.
Yeah. I would also say, I think that one of the best things we did, and I don't know if you just had known about this from when you had it, is we've designated where the zipper goes because all of the tent like sides have double zips. So you can kind of end up with the opening anywhere on the thing
For when you get up at
for when you
night
get up in the
and
middle of the night. And it's so
it's
annoying when
good to
it's
have
not in
protocols
place.
for things for
Yeah,
sure.
you need your protocols.
Okay. Anything else on the altitude tent?
Really? Oh, actually, it's you got to go slow, and if you get one, like you have to gradually adapt it or like gradually boost it up. Do not turn it to 11 on night one. Like it's not great sleeping. Like you adapt to it and you get better at sleeping, but the reality is every day when you wake up, you're coming back to, in our case, zero elevation. We're spending all day at sea level. So you kind of like come down, and then every night you're going back up. So every night it's a noticeable thing. Like, and I admit, like, I get a little claustrophobic sometimes if I've gotten up to go pee or whatever and come back in. And like, you're moving around, so your heart rate goes up just a tiny bit from resting because you've stood up. And getting back in, sometimes I'm like, It's hard to
Yeah, and
breathe.
so that's athletes always want to do more, but again, the big rock is that you need to sleep. So there is this, protocol really that you'd follow, right? And so you want to not overdo it. It's like more is not better. And that's, even at a place like Leadville, they talk about most people are not able to A, train effectively, and then also your sleep is so disrupted when you sleep in Leadville, which is again one of the things that we talk about is probably it's better to stay lower and drive up on race morning, even though I hate doing that.
Which we are not doing, by the way. We are actually staying in Leadville for the 2 days ahead
Yeah,
of the
so
race.
it's pros and cons. You're not driving around as much and you don't have the risk on race morning, so that is nice. But then it is also, now your sleep is poor that during that week as well.
I sort of figure with that one, because we're staying lower for the 2 weeks ahead. I mean, we're not staying low, we're staying in Breckenridge, but we're a little lower for the 2 weeks prior. And then we'll go up to Leadville like 2 nights before the race. And the reason for that is really just logistics. It just made more sense to be up there, which is, yeah, like
Right.
probably less good for sleep. But the reality is, I don't sleep well on race nights at the best of times. So it's not like down in Breckenridge, I was going to have a perfectly
Sure. And then you're
fantastic night of
stressed on
sleep.
that. So again, it's pros and cons. There's no perfect solution to any of this. And so then where is I going? So we the sleep at so you're f easing into the altitude tent. So most of them will give you some sort of protocol to start, or the websites of these things will go. And then you can use pulse oximeters to try and monitor your response. Because the dilemma I always find with these is they have the settings which are supposed to correspond to like a certain elevation, but it's obviously going to be off, if your tent's a little leaky or not quite sealed, or you have two people or one person, or I don't know. Actually, don't know if that actually changes it or not. But there's lots of variables that could change it.
No.
What elevation your actual house is at probably changes it. So this is just where you track that SpO2, the fingertip pulse oximeter, and you just what is your response, and then how do you sleep? And I would really stay at the low end and just gradually build it up, right? Because I think if you're coming from sea level, 5,000 feet is going to be beneficial for, probably a while.
Yeah. So all that to say, we're neither like saying you have to get an altitude tent nor that you shouldn't get one, just to, I thought so. I actually just have wanted to talk about it because I do think it is important to kind of like be pretty transparent about how we train and what we do. And to me, this was a pretty major investment for me to do. So I wanted to talk about it.
Sure.
So there you have it.
Okay.
Altitude. And I'm hoping we actually can get this altitude expert that I met to come on and talk about that. But the sort of like poor man's altitude training is something we're also kind of thinking about, which is heat adaptation. So it's
Sure.
not going to be exactly the same. It's not a one-to-one, but they are pretty similar. And also, I mean, Leadville can get hot. Like there's also just that.
Sure. Yeah,
So
and especially for the athletes who are out later in the day, they're taking longer, there's going to be often that midday can get warmer and warmer.
I don't think anyone's finishing before midday at Leadville for the
I
run.
think Keegan was pretty much at midday.
For the run, dear.
Oh, well, I mean, we're talking about both of these, but the
Fair
people that are out later.
enough, fair enough. I'm just picturing someone finishing like the 100-mile run by like 10 a.m.
Right. But I mean, they might see two hot periods potentially,
It's
right?
true, yeah.
So you're training right through that. And so there's all these factors for sure. So the idea with heat exposure then is, you can do this by training in the heat. So we see some athletes, certainly if you live in Arizona and you're going to melt into the pavement, be careful. You're already very heat adapted, I expect. So the people in Arizona or Florida where it gets really hot, they might actually already have a great advantage going to altitude and actually do better than they would expect just because they have this heat
Right.
adaptation. And in short, part of this is that the blood plasma volume expands, you have more water in your blood, and then your heart can pump more, and that cardiovascular output is a big help when we get to altitude. So that's one of the adaptations that we would get at altitude that also heat just, also creates. And that has some interaction with the red blood cells and the oxygen carrying capacity. But just said simply, that's sort of the idea then, is that you're sort of
Sure.
getting that. And then certainly just even that, I think there's a mental piece to A, if we do end up training in or racing in heat, then training in heat, it makes sense that you're used to it mentally. The sweating is a piece of that. So you're very efficient at sweating and cooling yourself. So I think that's just like a great tactic, really, for anyone who's racing. Probably this heat adaptation is something we could be including in training, assuming there's those basic big rocks like you're training most days. But even when you're not training both days, it's one of those things that you might be able to get into a sauna or a hot tub and do some of these protocols. With or without the training as well. So I think it is something that a lot of people could be considering. I'm actually really thinking about it for clients who have a hard time like motivating exercise. We talk about these frequency clients who just aren't training, for a variety of reasons, might not be able to get training. Like, what if maybe we could get them into this passive intervention where they're in a hot tub or a sauna or a bath?
I actually just spoke to Dr. Stephen Chung for an article I'm working on for Canadian Running about heat adaptation, and then another one on climate change and how it's going to affect runners. And I don't know, we were talking about the infrared sauna blanket, Peter, and he seems pretty keen.
I don't know. I don't know that the heat, like, I think you have to spend a lot of time in it is the problem.
Yeah, but I can get the one where you sit and you can have your hands out
It just
and just
sounds a
be
lot
tight.
like these boots that we were let off talking about that you don't use.
Maybe I could do both. I could just, I can sit at my desk with the boots on, with the sauna over me, with my hands out typing, with the altitude
Yeah, it
mask.
just sounds like a recipe for not getting used. So the idea then, I don't know if we need to go super into this. So you can train in the heat. There's a little bit of evidence for overdressing if it's like, not a ton of heat. So this time of year, we're in spring right now. Maybe you could overdress a little bit sometimes.
That's what I was gonna say. I've been kind of trying to play with that more often. I used to be like a very like the second it was above freezing, I would wear shorts. And
Right.
now I'm
And that's like a very runner thing, is
it's a
like
very runner
always on the
thing.
limit of like, oh, freezing.
Yeah, so now I'm kind of trying to just shift to the exact opposite way of thinking, where I'm just always a titch overdressed.
Right. And you probably, with any of this, you still want to preserve the big rocks of you have intense days where you're performing very well. So you would be on the limit of what makes sense with dressing because you want to be cooled optimally, but not like restrained by clothing and
For
not
sure.
miserable, not increasing the perceived exertion by being overhot. But you might finish a session. So you get really warm doing your intervals. You might actually bundle up and then finish the last half hour of your workout or something. That could be possibly
And
effective.
this is where I love, like in my pack, I always have my very lightweight Veloce windbreaker. It's really stretchy, actually. I'm plugged for Veloce out of nowhere here, but like the lovely thing about it is it's stretchy, so it actually fits over my pack. So instead of having to take off my pack, put on the jacket, put the pack back on, blah, blah, blah. I can literally just reach behind me, grab the jacket, and put it over the pack.
Right.
So I'm not actually like stopping to add
That's
back
one
in
of our big
clothes.
Leadville tips and endurance racing tips is
Don't
we
stop.
don't want that 0 kilometers an hour to try and keep you moving. And that's a little contentious. I say it's like contentious, but then like when you think about it, it's like, I mean, that's how averages work. If you want to get to the finish line in under 9 hours for the bike, and I don't know, what do they do at Leadville Run? Is it it's not beat the sun, but it's
Definitely don't beat the sun, but the women's record all time was set in like 1992. It's like 18 hours. I don't know what the men's is.
So then it's, there's an average speed there, obviously, right? So I always just, and it's less, running, you can just sort of keep walking, but you could see people where they lay down on the ground or they sit in the chair. And I get it. For some people, that's part of the routine and you have to do, foot care or you have an injury. But this all sort of ties together with pacing, right? Like it's the gentlemen who go off at their 20 minute best power for the first 20 minutes, and then somehow they're cramping and on the side of the trail crying at 70 miles, if not before. This is the idea of they aren't moving forward, and they made a mistake there as well. So this ties to fueling, the jackets being accessible, being able to ride with no hands, or being able to, use a descent to just, adjust something, or your shoe. Some people go to the washroom in these situations as well. I'm not proposing that, but it could happen.
Well, I remember training for Ironman, trying to get like capable of peeing on the bike was probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life.
Right.
Like, it's such a not like an unnatural thing for your body to do. So yeah.
Well, and it's interesting. A lot of people, like the peeing thing is interesting. I think there's some in the training we can get used to, like fluid balance, and make sure we're like maintaining that. Some people just, you're gonna have to stop and pee, and that's it is what it is, but we minimize that. But there is the also, like, I usually don't have to pee until I stop. Then if I stop and stand there,
Yeah,
then
there
I
is
suddenly
that
have to
for
go to the
sure.
washroom. So the thing is, like, if you stop, you're at the bottom of this hill, you're gonna have to walk up, which happens a lot for both run and bike in Leadville. People will have to walk chunks. Then it's sometimes like, oh, now I have to pee. And now I'm going to pee. Okay, well, I'm going to take this out of my pack and have a bar here. Again, for some people, it's okay. But if the goal is to get these belt buckles or the under a certain time or beat the record or place in the age group or place in the overall, then some of this stuff is important. So that was a somewhat aside from heat training, but is sort of related.
Well, I was going to say that I have that on our list here of things that I'm really like already thinking about now is like all of those small gear decisions that play into how often you have to stop. And I would say like from the stopping standpoint, during the 100 I did a couple years back, the one time I stopped to like fully change clothes when it was getting dark and colder, starting back up from that was the absolute worst part of that race. Like I have never felt like that was my lowest point, I would say.
So do you think in hindsight, would you, because I mean you did
I
miss,
wouldn't have changed.
you think you would have just
I
kept
would have been
going?
fine.
Or like
I maybe would have changed my shirt, but my feet were
I almost
fine.
wonder too, because you could have almost done, you know, you don't want to go like guns out, so to speak, but you could almost keep just walking and change your shirt, right? Or something, or you know, every lap you could almost change a piece if you wanted to, like way faster.
Yeah, I just don't think I really needed to. Like, it was nice once I had on dry clothes, but I mean, it was unnecessary, and I wouldn't like in hindsight I wouldn't do it. Plus, so out of that 100 miles, it was just under 24 hours, 105 miles to be clear. I stopped for over an like just around an hour. Like, I looked this up on my stats on Strava, and I would say 15 minutes of that was that one clothing change, because it just like your body is just moving so slow for like the small things. So taking off gloves and taking off my shirt and pulling down my tights, taking off my shoes, like even though you and Karen were helping me, it was still, I think my body just wasn't moving. Like it could move forward in a running motion,
Sure,
and that
for
is the
sure.
only thing it could do.
And I think this is the learning. Most people go to these events. They do what they do. They have the best plan they think. And then you look at it afterwards. And that's often the thing that you'll see is, wow, 2 hours of stop time, right? And then that's where people get motivated is they think, okay, I can pull this back. You know, I did 11 hours at Leadville. I think I can get under 9 if I just don't stop at all. Now, it's probably not that easy. You probably do have to stop periodically. There's going to be maybe you're waiting in a line of people because of, you know, trails getting clogged up potentially. Maybe you do have to stop to change something, do shoes, but it is like, how much of this stuff can we make super fast?
So that's definitely something I'm considering, because I would have said I didn't stop a lot, and then I was shocked when I realized it was a full
How much
hour.
can we do? Just even walking. I'm not saying that you can't take a break. Just it's a walk break, it's a coasting break. When I think about Leadville, right? These people are, you know, they're excited because they're going quickly downhill or something, but it's like, yeah, just sit up and, you know, adjust your shoe or grab a bar, stretch your back. So there's lots of opportunity there, I think. But this all has to be then borne out in training as well, where you're used to not stopping. If you're the person who stops at every trail junction training for Leadville, then it's going to be shocking to your body if on race day is the first time you've ever pedaled for more than an hour.
That's why I get so grumpy at you when we do our long runs and you're trying to like find new trails, and then you're like, stop looking at the trail forks, and I'm just like furious.
Yeah, well. There you go.
Because I can't stop, won't stop.
So we were on to heat and then got off of it a little bit. So we were talking about overdressing. I think that's like not a thing to overuse, but I do think that it's, especially as you're getting towards spring, I think that's something that a lot of people could do just to stay warmer. We've talked about for people who are always cold, sometimes that's a good challenge. Just keep putting on coats till you get too sweaty, you know, and then maybe you won't be as scared about going out in the winter. I do think there's a piece there. The other more popular heat adaptation things are going to be your sauna and your hot tub. And it's usually done after a session. You're warm from the session and you get right into one of these. So your hot tub or your sauna, usually around 40 degrees Celsius. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, plus or minus. Again, something that you can ease into. So if it's a little lower to start, don't stress on it because you're just getting used to the idea. 10, 20 minutes to start. You'll see protocols go up to 40 minutes in some cases. But when they're at that higher temperature for those two, like an actual sauna and then a hot tub, that's usually what you'll see. And then it seems like there's the hot bath is coming. And I'm trying to do this right now, but it's sort of, I don't know, it's just sort of weird coming home from a ride and not, you know, suddenly you have to lay in the bath for an extended period of time. Sort of weird, but I think there's something to it. And the idea though is that this is not like a beer and you're like really having fun in the hot tub. The thing is it's pretty uncomfortable and you have this urge to get out. And then that has to be like similar to training or anything that's dangerous, like training, where there's a downside, a risk of injury. You just need to be careful that you ease into it. So I think it's whenever that urge is like, you know, whatever out of 10, you know, you get out and that was today. Okay, I made it at this temperature for this amount of time. Or just start super conservative. 8 minutes. Okay, I got out. I didn't get a rash. I didn't, you know, have saddle sores. I didn't, you know, I'm not burnt from head to toe. I'll do the exact same thing for 10 minutes, tomorrow. And that's the idea. So I think, again, for a lot of people, this is going to be too much time. They don't have enough time to train already. But for some people, this might actually fit in. Maybe they can, sit on a call or something and do it. I don't know. I don't know what your life is like. Or, you're close enough, your spouse can get out and the kids still have supervision technically. They can knock on the door if there's a fire. Maybe it works for you, right? And for me, in the winter, I'm actually thinking this is a great way to just do like an hour on the trainer and then maybe you do something like this for 20 or 30 minutes and the motivation to ride is probably preserved and maybe this is pretty good. So I think that that's a world that we'll see progress a lot as this heat adaptation piece. But I think most of us, it's just making sure you get out in the heat of the sun and get some exposure riding. But then these other ones, these passive post-training ones are great options.
For sure. And then just Dr. Chung kind of pointed out to me, the big trend right now is really the sauna ice bath, like contrast thing. So you go in the sauna, then you
Trend
jump in the
in like
ice.
the fitness
In
the
like the,
Instagram.
yeah. So the fitness wellness world, to be clear. His point is this is not a good trend, not if you're trying to do heat adaptation. So when you get out of the tub, you don't turn on the cold shower. Like the point is actually like more like a big part of the, positive adaptations come from your body having to naturally cool itself back down after. It's like, so to artificially cool it down by, freezing cold shower, jumping in the cold plunge, whatever, you're actually kind of undoing a lot of that, and not
Well,
taking
we should
advantage of
put this
it.
on priority to have him on to just do
For
like a good
sure.
heat training episode. But what that sounds like to me is, so much of this is driven around the core temperature, which I don't like things like this as a coach. I don't like because all the research is like, well, you get your core temperature up to about 40 degrees Celsius. And it's like, well, how is any normal person going to measure this thing? It's like, well, you get an anal probe, just an anal probe and then you're in your bathtub, the kids are outside the door, and you've got an anal probe. And it's like, okay.
I
Is
mean, hey,
this
for some
who
people
did
that
this research?
that's a fun Friday night. I don't know.
I guess. So I don't really know what you do with that. They say, the temperature of the water and then the time, you're sort of assuming that, and then the sensations like that urge to get out, and then there's a balance there because a lot of endurance athletes are a little intense. So, they've certainly you've just cooked yourself. It's a little dangerous, right? So this is where I go back to like maybe we just ride our bike and sleep well and eat well and we'll be okay. But I think there's probably a piece there as well.
Oh, and then our last heat slash altitude PSA, hydration, so important for both of these things.
Sure.
Both of them will dehydrate you faster. So you do really need to prioritize hydration, not just in exercise, but just throughout the day. Blah, blah, blah.
Sure. And I guess that's where I was going is as you come out of the hot tub, like your core temperature will still be raised for a period after you get out of the tub or the sauna or whatever you're getting out of. So I guess that's the other thought there is like, why would you cool yourself instantly if you could get another 5 minutes
Well,
of
that's
elevated core temperature, which then the idea is that that's driving the adaptations is your body saying, oh, I'm really hot for 40 minutes a day or something. So interesting. Okay.
So yeah, there's that. And then, I mean, really just like last little tiny things I'm working on is just kind of figuring out like what shoes I'm gonna wear, exactly what our crew plan is. And that's a bit like that's a huge one for Leadville, whether you're biking or
Sure.
running.
Just all these aid station
There's
planning, the crew, people who are supporting you. It's a big undertaking. It's not what any of us will probably want to do, but it is nice.
It is
Yeah.
a
And it's related to
logistical,
that stop time, right?
yeah, it's a logistical nightmare, I'm not gonna lie. So figuring that out early, super important. And then, yeah, the other thing I've done now a couple times is night running, which I absolutely hate. It is the worst thing in the entire universe, but I am trying to make myself get into that more
I
often.
think you guys are doing it in a very odd way, but I think if you thought of it as like Friday nights, you go for a run and it goes into the dark, you guys have been going at like odd hours of the day.
I mean, it's just hard because now it's getting like it's not getting dark till like 8:30 or so. So that is past my bedtime. So it is like like we said, it's sort of the balance of like, are you giving up sleep for this? Because now I get home from a run and it's not just that I finished the run at 10, it's that I have to shower and now I have to kind of just like calm my system down.
Sure, that makes sense.
So it is, there's just a lot of moving pieces that I'm working through, but yeah, working away at it. Yeah, I think that pretty much wraps up this.
I guess the only other, the post is about everything but training, and I think we've covered a lot of the preparation, the heat, the altitude, the gear, the planning the months ahead so that you don't have big disruptions in your life, I think is a big one that we see. The training on specific terrain, getting to the specific terrain is a big thing. The other piece in the post, I think, that we talk about is sort of like the mechanical, technical skill.
Right.
And so for runners, this is, the time spent running downhill and climbing is
I think
probably important.
downhill always gets kind of missed, but Leadville, like the big thing about it is, so the 100 I did a couple years ago had the same elevation as Leadville, almost to the
Elevation
meter,
gain.
elevation gain, but it was so rolling. There was never like the longest sustained climb was only a few minutes. Leadville, the big thing about it is that it is a couple of massive climbs, but that also means a couple of massive descents. So like even forgetting the climb, I think the descent is going to be the hardest bit on the body
Definitely
for sure.
destroys. And so that's where the training specificity is important, right? You might go there stressed about altitude and climbing and then realize that you can't walk after 50 miles because you've just run down, 2,000 meters, 6,000 feet of fire road descent. And that would be, unfortunate, right? And then it's like, well, damn, you could have probably done some sort of armoring for that, whether that's, again, going to specific terrain or up and down repeats in a city, or strength training is going to help with that. Jumps are probably going to help. Like if you had to go, not do the actual thing, you had to prepare some other way. That's a great one. So that's, sort of related to the technical skill of similar with mountain bikers. If you've never gone down a screaming fast descent that has shale rock all over it, or baby head rocks or washouts, this is where a lot of masters end up. They're trained so hard in their basement for Leadville, and then they end up breaking their collarbone or something, right?
Right.
Coming down power line. That's sort of the big crash point, is that power line descent. So that's and then mechanical for running, I guess, is less. The shoe that you're going to use is the big mechanical thing for.
Well, packs too, though, because I mean, if you're not kind of dialed in on your pack, the chafing that you can end up with,
I
like,
guess that's it. Mechanical, like, and how you're going to carry your fuel. You're using hand bottles, or using packs. What are you using? And that's a bit of preference, I think. But you also want to, it seems like you want to look at what people are using in these races when they're winning as well.
I'm the only weirdo at this point that uses a hydration pack and not the two bottles, but I just hate the bottles so
I'm not
much.
sure. I mean, that would be a great thing for your coach David to weigh in on too, because I don't know. It's like the speeds are so high in some of these, especially under 50K, but I'd be interested in more of the 100 milers. But I don't know if it's just so that they can carry less water and fill up at aid stations or something is
I
the
just find
game.
them so uncomfortable. I think this is one of those like these packs were designed for men. Like if you actually think about for women, what it is asking of you to do, it is asking you to jam two straight things that are going to sit like straight right up against your boobs. Like how is that comfortable for anyone? It just boggles my
Hard
mind.
to say. So there you go. Some mechanical stuff there. The technical stuff certainly is a piece, even though these races aren't the most technical. They aren't the most, I don't know. I guess, you wouldn't expect to have huge mechanical issues here, right?
You
Versus,
knock on wood right now.
well, in a bike thing, right? There's more technical, like rocky areas where people flat all the time.
But yeah, to your point about mechanicals, yeah. So if you're doing the bike, it's really thinking about like, what do you need to have with you to prevent flats? What do you need to have in your aid station bags in case you've already flatted? Like, you know, you have extra stuff. How good are you at fixing a flat on your bike?
Sure.
Have you
And
ever
it
used
doesn't happen that often there. Again, there are races that are more,
flat prone?
or in running, it would be like, falling and like cutting yourself or
Sure.
rolling your ankle. There's much more technical baby head strewn courses in the world, certainly, right? But this is a factor that you're going to have to deal with. And we're just trying to minimize the downside where, like, you go to Leadville and then you don't finish because you crashed, or because your shoe ripped in half, or your tire ripped off the thing. Or I've heard of pedals that were worn out, right? And it's like, well, as a master, and if you're willing to throw money at stuff, then it's like, just make sure your bike's been serviced and really checked as far as pedals, not being worn out from 5 years of using the same pedal without any service. That's funny. The pedal always comes to mind, but then, hubs would be another one where people have just worn their bikes. They've just done huge miles. And so if you're looking to, you can't train more, but it's like your bike could go to the bike shop and just get fully overhauled in, probably 1 to 2 months out. Don't do this in like the week before, because they're going to realize that your frame's cracked and you're going to have to get a whole new bike. But trying to use that rest week period, which, in the Leadville plan, what we have for the bike, it tries to remind you, 2 months out, 1 month out, like, no new changes to the bike. Like, just try and get it serviced and keep it cool here for this last 4 weeks, which is the other thing, I think, with those last 4 weeks being, not the most, biggest or extreme or new, is just trying to keep you healthy Now that you've put it all the hay is in the barn, we're trying to get you to the race. So that's the idea there. Cool. So we'll put the post. There's a couple links here. We'll have the link to the Leadville Faster post. We'll link to the Leadville training plan as well. We'll link to the Can you prepare for the goal that you've set post as well. We'll put those all in the show notes.
Perfect.
Oh, and then I guess we'll put some of the altitude stuff as well.
Perfect. All right. Well, as always, thanks so much for tuning in. Hit us up with questions, comments, etc. over at consummateathlete.com or at consummateathlete on Instagram. And we will see you next week.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the Consummate Athlete Podcast. If you want to hear more training, racing, and endurance sport advice, make sure you subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating and review. You can also subscribe to our newsletter at consummateathlete.com for a weekly dose of inspiration and advice straight to your inbox.